well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those deads up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I am well.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I am here.
Very good. Are you going to grow your hair back by chance? I'm just curious.
Not at the moment. We'll see what happens in the long term. Problem is there's like a weird spot that you have to get through.
So what are you doing? You're just reshaving your head over and over?
Yeah, that's kind of how that works, yes.
Yeah, that's what I do, Phil.
I originally tried going in through my mouth and pulling it back down from the roots, but
you didn't have any bald spots, did you?
I was losing some hair. It was definitely thinning on top.
He was balding.
I don't know. Like the problem is like where your eyes are, and where the back of your head is doesn't go well, and like even when you're looking in a mirror, you're just seeing straight ahead, so it's hard to see. How much is going?
I was just curious.
And at some point, I realized there was more gone than I had realized that was gone.
I had the same experience, Mike.
I'm just getting there. So, and it wasn't really a thing I was anticipating, given most of my family members. But that's okay, because actually, this is less of a pain in the ass.
Well, you can always regrow it back.
Well, shaving your head is also really convenient during the whole COVID bullshit.
It's just convenient in general.
I had needed a haircut.
Phil,
you're
the only
February.
One on the podcast right now with hair, so shut up.
And then everything shut down, and by the time we got to August, it was just, ridiculous. So
I realized I might as well shave my head when my dad had more hair than me.
Yeah.
Jeez, this is crazy. Anyway, all right. Well, and we have from the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going? That's good. Yeah, you're right, Eric. Everybody's bald here. It's interesting. I always felt Mike had fine hair though. So it's just weird that he would do that. But it's
well, you can never tell though because he's always wearing a hat.
That's true. So you never
well,
would
not
see any
always.
Bald spot
it's just around you guys.
Anyway, for folks who are new to the podcast who are already perturbed because they're saying, what the hell are they talking about? So what we are Dark Discussions Podcast. We are part of the Dark Discussions Network of Podcasts. You can find us at www.darkdiscussions.com. Also, we have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join the conversation or start your own topic on that Facebook group. So anything genre related, it's being discussed there. Also, we are on Twitter, Dark Discussion 1, and you can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or go to darkdiscussions.com and press the contact us link, and that basically is essentially the same thing where an email is sent directly to us and we will read your emails on the podcast. Also, if you have any comments that you're interested in giving us or any type of feedback or suggestions to discuss, what topics, whatever, we are here and we will listen. Eric, what else can people find on darkdiscussions.com?
Well, they can find some articles that are posted by people, and they can also find links to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to financially contribute to your online artists, like podcasters. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions, and for every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover on the show. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw one at random on a quarterly basis and do a show on that topic. So if you'd like to support us, that's how you can do it. Producing this podcast is not free. We have to pay for things like servers, hosting, and equipment, and movie rentals, and all that kind of good stuff. So if you'd like to offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can help us out. Patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or follow the link on any page of darkdiscussions.com.
Yep, absolutely. And any help that anybody wants to give us, especially folks who have been enjoying us for many years, is greatly appreciated. Just for the fact that just this month we had to drop another $190 and hours of work to move the audio files to a separate hosting service. So that was required to prevent our website from crashing.
And when Phil says we, he means him. Yeah. Thank you, Phil.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah. We're not chipping in a penny until he pays us what he owes us.
Right, right. Fair enough. But yeah, the website, suddenly this within the past 30 days, we have suddenly kind of had a mini viral bit where a lot of people have been coming to the website much quicker, and we've grown much quicker than we expected.
And you know why that is, right?
No, I don't.
Well, when you add 30 podcasts to the network, all of a sudden you get more
But we've also compared to a year ago, we have a lot more Barrett than we did before.
Oh, that's it.
There's a draw right there. That's right. That's right. We also have the new website as well that was changed in August and has now become a full network of podcasts, as Eric just mentioned, but also a news site where everybody who checks out news every day for horror and genre stuff, darkdiscussions.com, has new articles daily, so it should be one of your daily sites to check out along with your normal ones. So,
and I think actually having 400 and some odd episodes in the can helps. I mean, I can't assume that everybody's brain works like mine does, but you know, you're like, oh, this looks like an interesting pod. Oh, wait, 6 episodes? No, that's no. They'll do 2 more, and then they're gonna vanish off the face of the earth. I'm not getting invested in that. You know, when you know, because you know what podcasts are like, popcorn. They just come and go very quickly. Yeah, you know, but when you've got staying power, and somehow we have staying power, mostly because of Phil.
Yeah, that is true. Well, yeah, I mean, you guys have been co-hosting since pretty much the beginning too. So, yeah, we're fairly consistent. We put out an episode of the main podcast, Dark Discussions podcast, weekly. So that we're always consistent, and we've been doing it for just about 10 years. We're gonna have our 10-year anniversary, I think, in March or early April. So
we got to figure out something to do for that show.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, no
yeah.
And then we'll have another anniversary right after that, probably about 5 to 8 weeks later when we have the 500th episode as well of the podcast.
Wow. What the hell do we do for 500? Or who?
Yeah, right. I know.
And yeah, well, we'll gush. I don't want to say anymore because, you know, we need to have something to talk about when we actually hit those freaking milestones.
That's right. And those will happen in late Q1 and early Q2 of next year, so of 2021. So, yep, absolutely. That's some things that have kept us around consistently. Like Mike mentioned, a lot of podcasts, they just fade out pretty quick, or they release an episode once every 3 months and whatnot. So that's one thing that's good about us, even if people think we suck.
And well, no, I mean, look, people are sheep. They see that we're on this many episodes, they think, well, they must be good.
Way to call our listeners sheep, Mike.
Absolutely. Well, because they're sheep. What are they going to do? Walk away? No, why not? Because they're fucking sheep. They're not border collies.
That's true. But yeah, but I mean, you know, we've been twice nominated for Rondo Awards. We've been mentioned in the Huffington Post. We've got an invitation as media to Tribeca Film Festival, among other conventions.
Yeah, we did.
And I do want to remind everybody, you know what it means when you've been nominated for an award.
Nothing.
It means you didn't win anything.
That is true. That is true.
It's sort of like when they say, you know, one of the top 10 films of 2020. It's mean you weren't in the top five, right? You know, it's, you know, you weren't number four. You know, you were clearly like 7, 8, 9, somewhere in there. You weren't number one. You're nominated for award, nice. But once the award's been given out and you're still calling yourself a nominee, you're a loser. So we're two-time losers. But no, that actually was really an honor, nevertheless.
Indeed. For folks curious what type of things we talk about genre films mostly. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno-thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, farm films, midnight movies, cult films, drive-in films, and the like. Basically, we talk intelligently about genre that deserves intelligence, and then we do talk about the baldness in here and cats and
Taylor Swift
and whatever. Alright, so for the folks who are curious, today is December 23rd, 2020, 2 days before the Christmas holiday, so
and Mike's anniversary.
That is right. Yep.
Happy anniversary.
That's right. For him and Pam.
Yeah, I know when Pam and I got married 20 years ago, I envisioned making it to 20 years and thinking, I really hope I'm going to be sitting alone in my living room talking to three other middle-aged white guys in the middle of a plague. Actually,
well, you were right.
And some
actually, 20 years ago, the plague part might have excited me more.
Yeah, not anymore, though. But yeah, first world problems. All world problems. But either way, we're here rocking and rolling, and we have a new topic tonight to discuss, and we're continuing on with our 2020 films. So basically trying to fill up the list of films for 2020. So when we do our best of year list in January of 2021 to look back at 2020, we'll have even more things to consider, and tonight is another film that we're going to discuss. And Eric, what is
here's the thing. The funny thing is, I didn't see my wife today. She had off from work, but I had to go in. And then after I left work, I went to the restaurant to pick us up dinner. So I didn't see her. But after I left work, I called her, and she asked what we're doing the podcast on tonight. So we're doing it on that movie we watched the other day. And she said, "What was that called?" And I was like, I blanked for a minute. I couldn't remember. And then I remembered like most of the title, but then I got stuck on the last word, and we were trying to brainstorm the name of the thing. And I finally figured it out about 2 minutes ago. I remembered what it was.
The 7th president of the United States, his last name. But with that, Eric, what is that topic tonight?
Tonight we're talking about a streaming movie released just this month on the Shudder streaming service called Anything for Jackson.
Hello, my name is Audrey, and this is my husband Henry. We don't want to hurt you or your baby. We feel this would be the best way for you to go missing.
DeWalt, morning.
Here to clean your drive.
No, everything's okay.
Thank you so much for the book.
Hail Satan. Hail Satan. Hail Satan. Hail Satan.
Assuming you've seen some ghosts, huh?
No one has more time than a grieving family.
We can do this. He's coming back to us.
Hey!
tree.
Oh, that's right. Anything for Jackson is a new 2020 film, as Eric mentioned, streaming on Shudder. It popped up there, and it's getting fantastic reviews from critics, 98% out of 52 reviews, and the audience reviews are 76%. So unlike some films, this is pretty consistent, where it's getting good reviews by both audience and critics alike. And the critics that have been reviewing it are some top critics, including RogerEbert.com, Austin Chronicle, San Jose, Mercury News, and the like. The film is directed
Did you actually read the Roger Ebert review this time?
I did not. I did not.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I did not read any reviews for this film for some reason. I did read a little bit about the director, Justin Dick, who is actually, I think, a Canadian, but he's actually a very proficient, prolific, I mean, but not in horror films. He's mostly does family fare for the Hallmark Channel. But I did read an interview with him where he said that he's always been a horror fan, and getting the cred of making such quality products for the Hallmark Channel was what made him able to finally do a horror film, which is what he's always wanted to do. And
well, I have to think if my parents named me Justin Dick, I'd be fantasizing a lot of revenge films in my head.
Well, they just named him Justin. The Dick was just automatic because of the surname. But either way, it's written by Keith Cooper. So it was a script from a guy named Keith Cooper that Justin was able to snag. And the film stars a handful of folk, but the three main stars are Sheila McCarthy, Julian Richings, and Constantina Mentelos. The film is an hour and 37 minutes, and it was released on December 3rd for Shudder, and no fanfare, but except for the fact that, like most streaming services, they promoted it heavily at the day it appeared, but prior, no one really knew that it was coming.
Shudder, call us.
Right. So I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it, and we'll start with you, Eric.
I heard about this. It was starting to get some buzz on social media, and Phil watched it and let me know that he thought it was good. So I checked it out, and I agree. I really enjoyed this movie. I liked the script. I liked how it was directed, how it was acted. It's unless something drastic happens, it's probably going to be in my top 10 for the year. I really enjoyed it. I thought Sheila McCarthy and Julian Richings were just phenomenal in roles that I haven't quite seen anything like. So I really enjoyed this movie.
All right, very well. For me, I actually heard about it similar to Eric, where through social media and whatnot. And then some folks like Mark Nato LaHue of the HorrorCast mentioned that it was a pretty solid film, and he's one person that I trust in their judgment of film. So I decided to check it out. And I think Dustin Watson of the Watsy Party podcast also had seen it. And I generally trust Watson's reviews as well. And it's a really damn good film, especially when I noticed that the critics and audiences both liked it. As well. And I would agree with Eric. This is most certainly a top 10 horror film of the year, unless something changes in the next week and a half. It really is a jumps right to the top 10 for sure, along with another Shudder film that I saw this week as well, which I will talk to folks offline about. But either way, this is a big thumbs up for me, and Shudder is still putting out some damn good product. Mike?
Yeah, I found out about this X number of weeks ago because you were making a comment about how wonderful it was. But I think this was right before you made us watch that other film, so I wasn't sure if I could trust you on it.
Well, again, The Giant, I didn't recommend. I said it looked interesting, and I was going in completely blind.
But yeah, no.
Old Phil.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this will be in my top 20. It will be. I don't know where. There are things I'm like thinking about the film that I don't know if there were necessarily a missed opportunity or if there were a strength. But we'll talk about that more in the reviews. But it's certainly a very enjoyable film and some very surprising and disappointing. I think it was last week I mentioned the movie Rabid, which is the Israeli film from earlier in the decade. And, you know, how they managed to get a couple of kills in there that you just didn't see coming. And that happened a couple of times in this movie. And why I think we agreed that the movie Host might have the kill of the year, this one has certainly a strong runner-up for me. Just because it was so unexpected and so out of the blue.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed a lot. I also like the fact that you have a movie about an older couple. We don't tend to see many older people starring in horror films. Horror films tend to be looked at as a young person's genre, so it stands out a little bit that way. And they are definitely anti-heroes, right? Because they're not up to good, but you are kind of rooting for them in a way. So, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit.
All right, very well. Barrett.
I had seen it advertised on Shudder, but the title really didn't catch me. And so I hadn't really taken a look at it. And then you had said, you had asked me if I wanted to guest host. And so I took a look at it, and I agree with everyone. I thought it was a really, really well done film. I enjoyed some of the surprising ways people died. And it just, the filming was great and the acting was great. It was just a good all around film. It's definitely going to be in my top 10.
All right. Very good. So, it appears that, this is a winner. One thing you said, Barrett, which is interesting is, yeah, the title, because I had even seen the film pop up on Shudder even before I saw Mark, Lenahue's, review. And, I thought the title made it kind of sound like a silly comedy stuff. So I kind of ignored it. So I could see how some people may just pass it by because of the title. But with that stated, Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. I'm going to preface this wiki by saying this sounds really, really, really spoilery, but all of this happens in the first 10 minutes of the movie. So here we go. Wiki. A bereaved Satanist couple kidnap a pregnant woman so they can use an ancient spellbook to put their dead grandson's spirit in her unborn child, but end up summoning more than they bargained for.
All right. Yeah, and it happens in 10 minutes, so that's fine enough with me. So appropriate. So we are going to get into spoilers and all that because we are not just a review show. We are a critique and review show. But before we get into the spoiler alert section where we will throw up the spoiler alert, anybody have any things they want to talk about generally about the film? What did you guys think of the somewhat black comedy of the film, which was kind of surprising?
I loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
Yes. Black comedy is the best comedy.
Right, because everybody's playing it straight. There's no real, like, you know, it's not a true comedy like Shaun of the Dead or something of that nature and whatnot. But it has parts that make it eccentrically funny intentionally, and yet it's all straight-laced. And as you said, Mike, that's can kind of make one of the better type of film genres, I guess, dark.
I kept on giggling because, like, there's this older couple that keeps on, like, doing older couple bickering things while they're, like, you know, dabbling in Satanism. It was really not like anything I'd seen before.
That's when I really got drawn into it, was when they go to the first meeting.
But there's that. I was going to say there's the, I guess as you're getting into the final act, as, you know, the husband just has one more thing to deal with, and these, you know, the mistakes just keep, I don't want to say mistakes, but the problem just keep mounting, which, you know, is good plot structure. And yeah, what they're doing is kind of horrible and evil, and yet they're likable. So you, and you understand why they're doing what they're doing. You know, it's coming from a source of pain. And so you kind of sort of root for them to be successful at the thing they're doing. So you kind of feel bad at the heart of the fact that they've gotten themselves into this horrible mess, and it just keeps getting messier. But you feel bad for him over it, and it's just like, oh God, poor guy, another one, another body. Okay.
Yeah, that's a fair point, because the characters are very likable, and yet, being the type of film it is, you know, their destiny by the end of the film is probably not going to be a good ending for them, and so that kind of is somewhat disheartening, because, like you said, oddly, no matter what they're doing, you still like them as people. And I also liked the whole cult thing. Barrett, you brought it up, the Satanist group that they go to. We see it a few times. And the thing that's funny about it is that some of the people there are just quirky, you know, rebel type people. And then there's actual psychopaths in the group too. And with this elderly couple dabbling with this group,
forces,
I guess,
of darkness.
Yeah, well, and even if the forces of darkness didn't exist and it was just this group of Satanists, you're going to have two types, which is just the anti-establishment people, like the leader of the group, who's just a girl that just likes doing it for whatever. And then you have one, I guess, the second in command, who's actually really into it and a psychopath. And so figure you're going to have some issues with this elderly couple, even if the supernatural didn't even exist. And so you figure that if the supernatural wasn't going to get them, maybe one or two of the psychopaths within this cult group would actually, kind of.
I just realized we're going to have to talk about hair again.
I don't know what you mean. We'll have to discuss it during the. All right, so I guess I'll just throw up a general quick setup of the film, and again, we don't have to go scene by scene. Folks can just watch a film to do that, but we'll talk about specific parts and characterizations and whatnot. But basically, it's an elderly couple who lost their daughter and son-in-law, maybe, and their grandson in a car accident, and all of them passed away. And for whatever reason, they focus on the grandson, Jackson, the most, where his loss has caused the most mourning out of the three losses. And
they actually explain it clearly in the movie. Yeah. We'll get into it in spoilers.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I don't know if they explain it clearly.
Yeah, I don't
know. It was clear to me.
Fair enough.
Well, if it's clear to you, then they must have explained it clearly.
Oh, there's a shot right there. Because of this mourning of their grandson, they decide that they were going to try to somehow bring him back from the dead, in like reincarnation or something. And the only way they could do this is to join a satanic cult. And for whatever reason, they believe that that would actually work. Okay, you know, maybe they're old school, so they're very superstitious or religious, where they do actually believe in good and evil, the devil and God, and all these other things, to the point where they would actually do something as crazy as this. And as a result, they decide to kidnap one of the patients. And basically, our lead, the grandfather, is a a doctor, I believe he's a general practitioner, or maybe even a gynecologist, but I think he's a general practitioner, and one of his patients is pregnant with an unwanted pregnancy, but she decides that she doesn't want to have an abortion because she does not believe in it. And then the doctor also discovers that she also doesn't have many family members, at least in the general area where they all live. So they figure that she could be a perfect individual to use her pregnancy as the rebirth of Jackson, their grandson. And so they kidnap her in the first, as Eric said, 2 minutes of the film. And that's pretty much the setup right there, I think, right?
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up about the film in general before we get into the spoiler territory?
Yeah, I would definitely look at this film if you're planning on doing some Satan-y summoning things. This would be a good, like, things not to do film. It's a good instructional video.
Satanic rituals are not for amateurs.
Right. Exactly. And don't trust anybody in your circle. That would be another one.
Don't trust your local Satanist.
Yes.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And as I mentioned, your local Satanists are just anti-establishment people who don't really believe in it, or they're actually are psychopaths. And so, yeah.
And by the way, speaking of which, I'd also recommend to go with this. A nice chaser for this film would be Satanic Panic, which is also another very dark comedy. Much more on the comedy end, but also a dark comedy.
Yeah, yeah, that would be a good, excellent double feature. As a matter of fact, I would concur with that statement. And both films are very good. All right, so we will throw out the spoiler alert, and we'll discuss everything and anything related to the film. But I think we all four agree that everyone should check this film out. It is on Shudder, and unlike many Shudder films, it won't appear on VOD for a long time, maybe 12 months. So if you want to check it out, Shudder, or wait for the disc, which will probably come out in about 5 months or so. But either way, it is readily available if you have a Shudder account.
And or you should really try one of those 30-day trials. Shudder is like constantly giving away free trials like crack back in the 80s, and because they want to get you hooked. It's not that expensive as a streaming service goes. It's $4.99 a month, I think, maybe $5.99 depending on how you sign up and where you are. But yeah, it's worth it. If you're a horror fan, at least give it get like one of the 30-day subscriptions. Try it. Try watching some of the stuff they have on there, their original materials, their slashics and all the rest. Yeah, and call us. Shudder, call us. Yes, it's definitely worth it.
Sponsor.
Yes, yes. Maybe I'll try to contact them and see if they would like to advertise on the website, and we would actually do the little commercial on our podcast. But this movie, as well as the other film that I mentioned, are two films this month alone that paid off Shudder for me for at least 60 days. So if you watch one film, you pretty much paid off your month subscription.
Right, good example, the movie Possessor, right, which Eric, you saw?
Yes, that's right. Eric
is on sale right now on Vudu for $4.99 in HD.
Oh, and I bought it.
Yeah, and I bought it.
That's worth it.
I bought it blind. But for that $4.99 that I paid for that movie, I got that one movie. Right?
That's a fair point.
So, hey, and that's for buying. How often do we spend $3.99, $4.99, $7.99 to rent a movie, or $20 to rent it and then buy it? That we after we realize we hate it. Yes, I mean, it happens.
That's right. So Shudder, as you can see, we're pumping you up big time. So we should make a commercial deal with you. All right. So let's get into the film. We'll talk about everything and anything. Where do we want to start? What do people want to discuss? I guess. What, Eric, you got something?
Yeah, sorry, I'm getting distracted. My brother's texting me. I was just going to say, the dynamic of the leads in this movie, the older couple, is just so great. There, because they seem like just like, you know, your grandparents or something, and they seem like perfectly normal people. Just there's this whole satanic angle going on at the same time. It's like, what the? It's such an odd juxtaposition. I loved the whole thing throughout the whole movie. And I also really liked some of the ghosts that end up showing up. Man, there were a couple that really made me squirm. Yeah, the whole thing with the teeth. Ooh. there are two things that will almost always get me, and it's teeth stuff and eye stuff. So that whole flossing bit was just making me like wildly uncomfortable. And the contortionist dude didn't make me feel comfortable either.
Yeah, and I don't know if I've seen that specific contortionist, but I've seen now a number of contortionists, and the first film I can think of off the top of my head seeing a contortionist as a big role was from Splinter. I don't know if they had one of The Exorcist with the spider walk, but that was technically edited from the film, or if that was just done from a harness. But no matter how much I see it, it's still effectively creepy.
Yep.
Right. It still works for me. Like, sort of like you said, teeth things, you know, you can pluck out all the eyes you want, teeth, and it does it for me. Hamstrings, Achilles tendons always get me. Yeah, it's just certain things. And let's be honest.
Fingernails flossing, for me. Fingernails.
Flossing is gross, right? Isn't it? Can we all just agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
There's just something creepy about flossing on its own, normally. Not before you get to demonic flossing. It's like there's a reason we lock ourselves in the bathroom and hide when we floss, because it's gross and nobody wants to see us do it.
True. I want to go back to Eric's first point, though, which was the couple. And even though Justin Dick didn't write the film, Keith Cooper did. He did direct it. And as I mentioned, Justin Dick does a lot of family-type films for the Hallmark Channel. And I was curious. I wonder if that was how he went about portraying these characters, because of his background doing family fare and melodrama and things of that nature on the Hallmark Channel. And if that was why he focused on having these two lead characters be similar to characters you would see in those type of films. But guess what? They just have, like you said, Eric, the satanic thing going on the side. And I think that is a really good juxtaposition. So I think his background actually made this film even more original, never mind the correct casting of the people to play the two important roles in this film. Comments? Questions? Anyone?
I agree. I think it probably did help with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's all I can think of. I mean...
Yeah, well, I think it helps to have a good background. You know, it's people are always surprised when you get somebody who's a comedic actor, comedic director, come out and do a good horror film, when really it's the same thing. It's all about building tension and having a payoff, right? Set up and payoff. You know, and if you can build up tension in comedy, you should be able to build up tension and relieve the tension in horror as well. And just, does it end in a laugh, or does it end in a jump, or a scream? Or a cringe. So yeah, I think having those are tools and skill sets you can bring in from elsewhere and use them here. And let's be honest, we've all watched enough horror movies where they really needed somebody who knew how to write and direct sympathetic characters.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Barrett, your thoughts. You said yes. Give us more details on your opinion based off of what Mike said.
Well, I've had to see enough Hallmark movies. I've probably even seen those because my wife watches them all the time. And I think, you know, that they're all about, you know, that just conservative family lifestyle and, you know, people just getting along together. And yeah, I think it probably influenced his direction in this film.
Did you ever see the one about the woman who has to come back home to like the small town, leave her big job in the city, and ends up leaving her fiance for her childhood friend? Did you ever see
that? That's every one.
That's right? Every single one. Yeah. Or, you know, the guy has to be a widower because that makes them definitely more appealing.
Right. So. Right.
Well, he's got that insurance money.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So it could most certainly have played into how he went about this film. And I think one of the reasons why it feels somewhat original take on, I guess, the demon possession, satanic type films, and the reason it's getting such great reviews, both by critics and audience alike. I mean, not many films get 98% good reviews with 50 or more reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and this film did. So that's pretty crazy.
Well, I think there's things that it does that are different. I think we have all seen 1 or 30 possession movies in the last couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it starts by telling the tale of the possession. How does one get one possessed? Usually we walk in and, oh, they're already possessed. And we need to remove the cursed entity from the child, right? Number two, you're on the side of the demonic forces here. Right. Again, they're the anti-heroes here. And again, it's then so you're looking at it from their angle. And then the fact that you are dealing with a sympathetic old couple, you know, just to keep hitting on that. You know, these gives you something, a fresh new take on a very tired premise. Sometimes flipping that script is all you need to take something fairly trite and mundane and make it something new. Now, it can go the other way. Like we've talked about the inverse house invasion films, right, where they invaded the home and the people in the home were even worse than the people who invaded it, you know, and that got boring real fast, but the first time it's really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is true. And that's, this is kind of like the first time of this new way of this genre, subgenre, I guess, similar to like the first first way the reverse home invasion happened. You know, that was kind of original and fresh too. So that's a good point. And generally also, based off of what you said, Eric, with the acting and the warm feeling we had of the couple, I think even if this film is repeated or copied, I think this one will stand out just for the fact that the story, never mind the acting and casting, are all fantastic anyway.
Right. There's some great chemistry. And some good writing. Like, there are a couple of scenes that they didn't have to have in there. But in my opinion, they really added something to the movie. A couple of examples are when the pregnant girl first wakes up and she reads her that letter that they've prepared. that scene didn't have to be there, but it was really funny. And it really kind of added to the whole dark comedy. And then, the scene
what was the line she says? Please don't scream and beg because it'll make us feel bad. Something
yeah,
like that.
Yes.
please don't yell at us. We have feelings too. And then there was a scene out behind the house when she shows him that she can bring a bird back to life. And he's like, you can do that? And she's like, I've been doing it all morning.
Right, and that's when it becomes real to him, and he's like, right. And again, he's not. She's the one that's instigating it. This is really her, meaning the grandmother's, that really wants to do this, and he's just the type of person that wants to make his wife as happy as possible. Mm-hmm. And so it's really anything for Jackson, for her, and he's anything for her. So he's right. Willing to do anything for her. Yeah, go on. Mm-hmm.
And she's like the little kid who got a new squirt gun. Right. It's just you have a new toy. You want to use it. And so you just go around squirting everything. And so she's figured out how to bring the dead back. And so she's running around. If it's dead, I'm bringing it back. without a thought in the world of, you know,
consequences. What are those?
Satanism, Satanic Bible, or whatever the book was.
I like when they're bringing her back for the first time and she just grabs the candlestick or whatever off the side and starts beating her with it, but not very well.
The thing that too that was interesting about our captive, her name was Becker, was she actually gets to see Jackson in the house,
right,
as a ghost, and yet Audrey and Henry, which is the elderly couple, they don't see Jackson at all. And so I thought that was an interesting aspect, is that the two people who want to bring Jackson back can't even see him, and yet other people, specifically the one that was chosen for hosting Jackson's soul, could see Jackson. I thought that was a curiosity.
It's interesting for sure. I don't know if it means anything, except maybe Jackson wanted to come back. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. It wasn't really explained, but it kind of, what it does, it sets up right away that the supernatural will exist, right? Because originally we're just thinking the first like 10 minutes of the film, I just thought they were just kooks, you know, and then when she sees Jackson and they don't, that not only allows Henry and Audrey to know that, okay, this may actually be real, what they're doing, but it also lets us, the audience, know that, okay, this is actually going to be a supernatural film and not just two crazy people who think, that a Satanist that think they can actually do something when there's no such thing. And then, of course, the bird scene really hits the home run for us, the audience, to know that it's real. And it also shakes Henry up a bit, too, because he's the one that says, we should probably stop doing that, because you could tell that if he had his choice, he probably would hope his wife would say, yeah, you know what, let's just stop and not do this.
Yeah, I like, by the way, the fact that they don't do the thing, again, that we've seen 1,000 times now, which is, they've been dead all along, you know, they weren't really here. You know, that's very trite and very cliched. And so when we see Jackson, it's like, what, a minute and a half before they reveal Jackson's actually a ghost?
Exactly. Oh,
right. They don't.
Yeah,
right,
the very same scene.
Right. They don't string it out like that. Oh, he's the little boy who's living with them, and then at the end of the film, you learn he's the one they're trying to put into the baby because he's really dead. He died in a car accident. Ooh, spooky. No, that's not interesting anymore. And the audience would have been 100 miles ahead of you, right? Because they're looking for people who are not interacting with each other.
Yeah, and I like that point that you brought up, Mike. I didn't even think of that, but you're absolutely right. Because I even though the Others and Signs and A Tale of Two Sisters and Goodbye Mommy had either a ghost or a figment of the imagination of the lead character thinking there's someone there and they're really not, and the whole film, the audience assumes those people are there or are alive, and then at the end, poof, you know, it was original with the Others and Signs. But then if they did that here, that would have been a disaster, I think. And I'm glad you're absolutely right that immediately when she says she sees the little boy, Becker says she sees the little boy, Audrey and Henry are like shocked, like, oh, my God, it's real. We can't see him.
This might be working.
Yeah, and I, yeah. Phil, I got to congratulate you, man. I don't think I've ever heard so many films spoiled in such a short period of time.
They're all 20 years old, so I don't care.
They're not all 20 years old. Some of them are only a couple of years old.
Well, Goodbye Mummy is the only one that's new. The Tale of Two Sisters and Signs, not Signs. It's not Signs.
You even got the movie wrong. Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
Sixth
I got the movie. Sixth Sense. I kept on saying
got the right director, though.
I got the right director, yeah. Sixth Sense and the Others. But you're right. Actually, the Others are going to be remaking, I hear. As they do.
Why?
I couldn't even get into that film.
Oh, that was a great film. I mean, because I just love
it. Okay, they anyway. Wouldn't let you in?
But So I spoiled all those films. I apologize. What else do we want to discuss? I mean, how about how once they open the satanic door, in a sense, in a figurative door, bad things happen to people around them.
Oh, here's the thing. This is my favorite aspect of the movie, is because they set all these things in motion, right? Because they're trying to get Jackson back, and they try this ritual. But the thing is, they don't know what they're doing. They really want their grandson back, and the guy's going along with it because, as Mike was talking about, anything for his wife. But his wife really isn't, like, I mean, she's taking it seriously, but at the same time not serious enough to actually, like, figure out she shouldn't be doing incantations if she doesn't know for sure whether she's doing the right thing or what it's going to result in. The fact that they do this little ritual and it kind of gets halfway there, it's really awesome to me. And those ghosts that come marching through are fucking awesome.
And, you know, it's basically, it's at some point before we joined the film, they were sitting at the kitchen table and the words, "What's the worst that could happen?" came up.
Yeah. Right. And they think they have this awesome plan that's gonna fix this,
right? And that
possibly go wrong.
Yeah, that's the danger, right? That's always the danger, and it's something I try to impart to certain people. It's just because you can't foresee anything going wrong doesn't mean nothing can go wrong. It just means that you don't have enough of a vision for how disastrous things could be. As all these people are getting Facebook reminders of, 2020 is going to be our year. You know, that's
right. Well, you see that every year. I mean, even though 2020 was a disaster for most people, you always have these people going, "I can't wait for next year." And then the same people 12 months later goes, "Man, that was a shit year. I can't wait for next year." You know, it's just like a rotation of stupidity. But either way, I have to say that once the door opens and all these bad things happen, and then even some of the people who have bad things, actually all the people who have the bad things happen that are around our two leads, they become ghosts themselves, which is unfortunate. So they're almost damned too, and they're just innocent bystanders that just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Oh, and their deaths are great.
Yeah, they are.
the repeating gunshot was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. And then she keeps doing it over and over and over again.
She's been doing that all night.
Yeah. I know. And she's trying to talk about, you know, and then she just shoots herself for no reason. It's just, like, hilarious. Now, Eric, Mike said that since it was, well, understood by you, could you explain to us why they chose Jackson to bring back and not their own child, specifically
Jackson
their daughter?
Actually died in the car accident. Their daughter did not die in the car accident. She was alive for months afterwards in a wheelchair, mourning the loss of her child, and eventually committed suicide.
Okay.
Right.
Fair enough.
And they mentioned they have to take the child from, I think they said, purgatory.
Right.
Is where the spirit has to come from. And as a good Catholic boy, we all know that if you commit suicide,
that's not where you're going.
That's not purgatory, and it ain't going to be Disneyland.
Right. And for folks who are not familiar with the Catholicism, as myself and Mike are for sure, is that if you're not baptized, or if you're too young and you're not even confirmed, in a sense, you are still, quote unquote, if not innocent,
unclean,
or unclean. You're just there. You haven't been brought into the arms of God yet, but you're not a true sinner. You go to a purgatory, your soul or whatnot, because there couldn't be any true judgment on your character because of it. And that's where supposedly a young child's soul would be waiting to eventually, you know, for judgment day, I guess, even though they can't be judged because they didn't live long enough to determine how good or bad their life was and such.
But doesn't it seem like what they pulled back actually came from hell instead of purgatory?
Well, that's
here's the thing, though. They didn't pull that. Jackson was there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they performed a ritual that didn't go all the way.
Right.
What they were trying to do was make it so that Jackson's spirit could go into the baby, right?
Right.
What they ended up doing, what they ended up doing was just kind of opening this gateway to spirits, and all of a sudden all these spirits showed up to try and compete to go into the baby, because they all want to not be ghosts anymore. They'd all rather be in a body.
And they want to get out of hell for sure. That's
right. Right. So I don't know. They were hazy on the details. I'll give you that. But that's the basic gist of it.
Yeah, and also some of those ghosts may not even be ghosts of humans. They could actually just be demons too, right? I mean, it's not actually clear, right? I mean, obviously, the police officer and the plowman were ghosts of humans, but the twisted.
Sorry, I just thought about the snowplow guy.
Yeah, so the twisted contortion person and the tooth fairy one, they could have been demons. We don't know anything about them. So,
well, I think we're seeing a lot of suicide in that, possessed suicide maybe, but suicide. I have a feeling the contortionist was autoerotic asphyxiation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, with the bag over his head and all that other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the tooth fairy, that may have just been, it doesn't fit thematically, but boy, it'll creep the hell out of the audience. That could have just been what that was there for. So it might have been a demon or something. And they don't, like, again, they never claim to say, like, you know, The Exorcist, that these are the rules, right? You know, and these are the rules. These are these rules kind of in their universe. You know, if we've seen shows like Buffy and Supernatural, people come back and forth from heaven and hell all the time. The rules of this universe apparently is probably not, but why, I don't know, why these suicide people came back, you know, from hell when the mom couldn't, you know, who knows?
We have to get in the costume too. The ghost costume.
Right. Well, I don't know if that was actually her daughter or not. But yeah, they also go for help to somebody who's not reliable, right? Because that dude is creepy as fuck. I don't know if that guy just looks like that or whether there was some makeup effects going on, but he just looks like he has black eyes and it's just disconcerting.
It is maybe the worst comb over I have ever seen in a movie.
Right.
It's a comb over. It's a heavy comb over. It's not like a thin little couple of wisps over his head. But the back of his ear.
But my point here is that they go to this guy for help, and he's not necessarily telling them the truth because he's got his own agenda. Right. So yeah. Even that information we get from that third party may not be the truth.
Because the book says something in specific, but it might not actually say that. He wants to have whatever he wants to do done.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. He comes out, and he's the one that basically tells us that the head of the Satanists is just an anti-establishment goth chick. And we find that out later anyway when she calls and warns them about Ian. But yeah, Ian, we don't even know his agenda except that we know that he's not all there and that he's...
We find out what his agenda is.
Yeah, well, when we find out that he has a very dangerous criminal record too, I guess, from the head Satanist who warns Henry and Audrey about him, right?
Well, I don't know if that's related to his agenda, but yeah.
Yeah, well, right. But he's not there to help them, in other words.
No. He's there because they have acquired this incredibly powerful satanic book. And they don't know what to do with it. And he's got ideas.
They can only partially read it, and he can get more out of it, it seems like.
Right, right.
Well, because he's the guy in the know, right? The only difference, he's the guy who knows it. He's studied it for years where they haven't. He knows what the book is. They kind of, they tracked it down and paid a shit ton of money for it, but I don't think they necessarily understood the power of the book, right? They're just kind of going through and like,
right,
like random, like cold calling numbers out of the phone book. You know, it's like, what's the spell we have to try to and see, let's see what this does. Oh, it brings birds back from the dead.
Yeah. You know what it is? It's kind of like, basically they, meaning Henry specifically, goes off through like eBay or somewhere and he finds the book and he purchases it for like 10 grand or whatever. And he's holding on to it. And when Ian sees it, he knows exactly what it is while Henry's looking at it differently. So in other words, I was thinking of it like say a Tom Brady or Pedro Martinez rookie card, and Henry buys it, has it in his possession, knows it has some value, but doesn't really know. And then some shyster named Ian comes by and he sees the Brady and Martinez cards in possession and goes, you know, so in other words, he sees an opportunity to screw Henry over while Henry doesn't know exactly what he has, even though he knows it has some value.
Well, they spent their whole retirement.
Weird analogy, Phil.
Well, and they spent their whole retirement on it, if I remember correctly from what they said. And I find it really funny because he's like, I want the book. Oh, and $10,000, because you guys look like you have more money than me.
Well, I know they spent, I'm not sure, they said they spent their retirement fund, they drained their retirement funds, but I don't know if it was just for the book or if it's for this entire scheme, because the idea is to murder the mom after the birth, burn the house down, and then move to Mexico. Yep. And I'm assuming they just drain their bank accounts and have enough money to live in Mexico.
Right.
Yeah, for a while. So I'm guessing, either they're gonna murder him, and let's be honest, not a big loss to society, or B, they can absorb the $10,000, you know, if need be.
Yeah.
Sure.
And yeah, they don't really care about the book past this either.
Right. And well, and his practice is pretty big, and he's near retirement age. He's the type of guy that could sell that practice to a young doctor and make a fortune, because that's how a lot of doctors make their main money, isn't just being a doctor. It's when they decide to retire, they sell off their entire practice to another person, and they make, you know, a couple million bucks, because the other person then gets a free practice where 99% of the patients aren't going to switch doctors. They'll just go with the new doctor at the practice.
Yeah, but the problem is, when he's ready to go to retire, he will be on the lam from justice, having just murdered his possessed grandchild's baby mommy and burned her body in an arsonist act of arson. So I don't think he's going to be able to really get a good deal on his practice.
And that's a fair point. That's fair.
And he was using the practice to find his victim, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't know that, though, but yeah. And I think that he only did that at the end. Actually, I don't even know if he was looking through his practice for the victim. It was just a coincidence. She came in that day.
Yeah, serendipity.
Yeah, it was just luck, because she came in and she goes, I'm pregnant, what do I do? And he's like, suddenly the light bulb, you know, pops up in his head.
Well, I think because the only patients we really see him interact with, right, are her and the guy who's complaining about, herpes or genital warts or something?
He needed help immediately.
HPV?
HPV, the new one, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure, you know, he's involved in something sexual. So the odds of him finding someone, the right candidate coming along, was pretty good. You know, it just happened to be her.
Sure. But I don't think that was, he was specifically using the practice necessarily.
No, this wasn't a plan.
Yeah. I mean, it appears that he's been in this practice for years, and he's a well-respected guy and has no unethical behavior behind him. So I think the practice just makes it easier for him to find someone. And again, I think it was just, as you said, serendipity, luck, that she walks in at that moment and says, I'm pregnant. I was like, aha. And she's the one that we find out a couple of scenes later walks by the house every day for exercise in the morning. And so he's at first-hand basis knowledgeable to talk to her, not just as a patient doctor, but as a neighbor too. So it's easy for him to snag her than say some patient that he wouldn't be able to get in his yard without actually kidnapping them.
Well, she was probably the catalyst for the plan. Like, they didn't have a plan up until that point, and then he was like, probably talked about her to his wife, and then they made up a plan. Like, they had been wanting to bring the son
No,
back.
I don't think so, because he said, they show a scene where they're sitting down, and he goes, oh, I think I've just found our host. In other words, they've been talking about it for a while.
Oh,
just
yeah,
that they
you're
were
right.
Looking
I remember
for the
that
host,
scene,
right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Plus, I believe their quest for the book involved a trip to the Middle East.
Yeah, that's right.
Sounded like it, yeah.
No.
Yeah, indeed. Now this Ian guy, let's talk about his I guess, hidden agenda. Who wants to discuss it? Bring it up. Discuss. You know.
He wants to summon Satan. That's pretty straightforward.
Yep. But why?
Because he's a Satanist.
He's crazy.
But what is his goal to have Satan appear?
Probably to fix his hair. That would probably be the main thing, because that was some nasty shit.
Right. But again, yeah, I mean, whether or not it doesn't matter. It's because, like, he's unhinged anyway. And a bad guy and whatnot. But I thought it was interesting, too, because I honestly thought that they were going to go with the cult and the Satanist, lead Satanist as the person, but no, it isn't. They played the whole Satanist cult as how it probably is in real life, which
bunch
is
of posers,
posers and kooks, and whatnot. But I loved how they
write all letters to Phil at AOL.com.
I loved how they had the meeting at the community center. That was awesome.
Right? How she totally busted him for eating the snacks.
Right. Well, and how do they go about signing up to use the community center? What do they write? Local Satanist practice number 47? I don't know. Or did they write a fake thing and said just the garden club, and then they should, it's really just a.
You've thought about this way too much.
I guess so. Well, I try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves.
I think they just do. I mean, I have never had to rent out a community center. I have a feeling that what you have to do is something like you go there and you say, "Hi, I'd like to rent the community center." You know, if it's open to the public, I'd like to book it. And I just need to know, like, a lunar calendar so I know when the blood moon is, or, you know.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, because, like the Girl Scouts, they lock in the community center for, and they give their...
About a bunch of psychos!
and they lock it in, and then they sign up and pay as the Girl Scouts. But you're right, yeah, you could probably just rent it out as anything. I mean... Myself, when I do our fantasy baseball draft.
Speaking of psychos.
yeah, there you go. We rent the hall to do it. And I mean, I've prior to a few years ago, we call it the New England Baseball Group when we sign up. But before, I just said my name, and they said, yeah, sure. How many hours and this is the price. And that's it. So, maybe it could be that way. Or like you said, Mike, it could just be less formal if it's a small town where, you just say, hey, I want to use the center. Okay, fine. Yeah, just let us know when you're out so the janitor can come in and clean up.
Right, and there's probably, times that, I imagine, I don't know, maybe Wednesday nights are busy, but there's probably nights where days, 10 o'clock a.m. on Wednesdays where it's open. And easy to get.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's why, like, trivia nights that I go to, they always have it on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And when I did those 8-minute dating before when I was unmarried, they were always on the weird nights, too, because it always brought people trivia, and those 8-minute dating things would bring in people to a bar that generally, or a restaurant that would generally be empty on a Tuesday or a Monday night.
I can't believe we've been talking for 10 minutes about booking a venue.
Well, yeah. We're trying to talk intelligently about a genre that doesn't
Yeah, that's not what's happening, Phil.
Eric, we've got a 500th episode to plan. And the celebration, we have a Dark Discussions meetup in Mystic to plan.
If those things are ever going to happen again.
I love optimism.
I don't. Optimism is for fools.
Now, let's talk about Becker. I actually liked her character a lot because she did not fall into the new 2010s and modern final girl. She was not the superhero, but she also wasn't the scream cream queen running for her life either. So I felt her
that's because she was chained to a bed. Duh.
So I felt her depiction. Well, right, but she wasn't a crying, sniveling person, nor was she a wise ass that. You know, that a wise ass would get their head kicked in by
or super competent.
Captain. What's that, Mike?
Or super competent. You know, she wasn't, she didn't right. like, she didn't escape and do kung fu moves at, you know, 38 weeks pregnant. You know, it's just. Right.
Exactly. And so I felt that was really good writing for that character. They made her more realistic, for sure. And I also, one of the best scenes that happened with her was how they got her phone password.
That was pretty cool.
That was so. Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh my god, that was brilliant, brilliant. I mean, this movie would be perfect for any serial killer out there. So don't. Hopefully, they're not watching the film. They can figure out what to do. But yeah, basically, her character was pretty. Realistic, because she was in a situation that she didn't want to be in. Obviously, she didn't mouth off to her captors, because if she did in real life, most of them would be punchy in the face and, you know, violence and all that. But she also wasn't sniveling and I guess lost as a human being and going insane. And then, like Mike mentioned, when she does finally escape, she's not doing kung fu karate. She's actually doing what a regular person would
run
do.
Like hell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that was one thing that I was surprised, was that when she escapes, it was a little more rural than I expected. You know, because it felt like a more of a suburban area. Now, let me ask you this. Who was...
Eric, was the dead of winter. There would not have been any crickets.
Well, that is true, Mike. What was that thing that was walking across the road at the end? Anyone know?
Satan.
That was Satan, the thing that came up out of his body.
Oh. And so she sees Satan, is what you're saying?
Yes.
On the road?
Yep.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I was confused because I have this, you know, the stereotypical image of what Satan would look like, but that was a cool image. Mm-hmm. Of Satan.
And it's, yeah, I see. I'm kind of with you, Phil, that I don't know that maybe I didn't get a good look at Satan coming out of the body, but I didn't know it was Satan. I just kind of figured it was Satan.
I'll be honest. I rewound just to make sure I was putting it together.
Well, they did a very unfocused view of it whenever they showed it,
mm-hmm. Right?
So it's kind of hard to keep your eyes on it.
But how did Satan get there when it was in the house originally, and she had already driven away?
He's Satan.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Could it be true. Satan? Yeah.
Yeah, he's the all-powerful Dark Lord.
Well, not all-powerful, because he lost.
But pretty powerful.
But pretty up there, you know.
Yeah.
He's like one who lost the Super Bowl, but he's still good enough to get to the Super Bowl.
Right. He's a 30th level mage or something. He's more super demigod.
Still, yeah, out-nerded me. Congratulations. I used a sports metaphor, and you went D&D. Not many people can get to my right on the nerd factor. Congratulations.
Oh, he definitely did.
Well, I did use the baseball and football cards, but then again, people could say that's a nerdy too.
That's also getting nerdy. And yeah, you didn't talk about baseball and football. You talk about baseball and football cards and fantasy. Was it fantasy baseball or fantasy football?
Fantasy baseball,
which is even nerdier than fantasy football.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And I do not say that as a pejorative. I heartily approve most things nerd, but you know, I'm just saying I'm not used to having to be looking on my right at somebody nerdier than I am.
At the beginning of the podcast, when Phil insisted he was not a nerd, until one glorious day when he knew what die to roll to do the damage for pole axe.
Yes.
Pole arm, halberd, D10. Yes.
But that's not nerds anymore. That's mainstream stuff.
Well, nerds are mainstream. Nerds. They're still nerds.
Nerds are mainstream.
Well, I'm removing the term and just saying normal mainstream people.
We're not removing the term. You're a nerd.
I refuse to accept that. Now, what else do we want to discuss on the film? We got any other specific
the snowblower scenes? Guy? We got to go into that.
Yeah, we just
so this poor guy comes up to the house that wants to do some work for them, and they don't want him there because they don't want anybody around the house. And so
yeah,
he's like, I'm gonna blow your driveway because I'm just gonna be nice.
And because he made him feel good. He did something. He said the wrong thing and made him feel good.
The moral of the story is never be nice to anybody.
Yeah. So then he jumps into the snowblower. That was a great scene.
And just like face plants.
Yeah.
And I mean, and when you think about it, all right, he had the snowblower turned upside down, turned up.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not looking at that. You're looking at him.
Yeah.
You know, so he just goes like, you know, hey, how you doing? Have a nice day. You know, just.
No, he was clearly being possessed by
someone
when that happened.
Isn't it good you're bringing back Jackson or something like that, right?
Yeah, he did it right. He's in there, and then he jumped in the snowblower.
Which totally wasn't at all suspicious.
Yeah,
well, then one of my favorite moments of the whole movie is after that happens, and what's his face? Henry. Poor Henry. He's trying to get rid of the body and cover everything up. And the detective calls him. Basically like, let's meet at your house. And he's like, oh, you know, the office would really work better for me. I'm out and about right now. She's like, yeah, let's meet at your house. I'm on my way. And he just the yell he lets out of frustration at that point was just fucking awesome.
That was awesome.
And then he runs home, right? He leaves the truck.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, it was probably best.
The dead body's in it still, right? Yeah. He hasn't pulled it out.
Yeah. Right, he's burying, you know, snowblower guy out in the middle of the woods somewhere. And he's not, and doing a really, and again, I got to applaud him for this.
Worst grave ever.
But he only has to, like, hide it for, like, 24 hours, right? I mean.
Yeah, but still, he didn't even get it covered with snow.
No.
He was trying. That counts.
I know. It's ice. It's like there's no way you're gonna be able to break through solid dirt during the winter. You just can't do it. Not especially at his age, you know. And he's a lanky guy. It's not like he's Dwayne Johnson.
I really like when they get Ian to come there to start help. It's Ian, right? The guy that. Okay, so when he comes to help them, and then he finishes going through everything with them, and he's like, "Okay, I'm gonna leave because I don't feel safe."
Right.
And he's the one with the big schemes, and he's leaving.
I also like how he was he was the one that did the blood on the floor. He's like, yeah, and don't mess that up or else bad things are going to happen. And he ends up being the one that breaks the line. So he gets attacked. That was pretty sweet.
Right, right.
And the suicide ghost was still messing with him the whole time. Just blam. Ah, what the fuck?
I hope that happens to you the rest of your life.
Unfortunately, the trailer kind of ruined some of it. I was forced to watch the trailer because when it was my wife, you know.
Okay, no, you weren't. You weren't forced to watch the trailer. You let yourself be forced. But yeah,
I let myself be forced because my wife wanted to choose a movie, and I mentioned I heard this was a good film, and so she said, "All right, let's watch the trailer." And they kind of show the snowblower scene, and it's like, so when the movie started, I already knew what was going to happen, unfortunately.
And I'm going out on a limb, and I've never met your wife yet, I don't think.
Eventually, yeah.
But you've told us enough, she doesn't like horror movies. You keep telling us that.
Right.
This isn't a horror movie, it's just a story about a sweet old couple trying to get a ghost to possess a pregnant woman.
Let me explain. She likes thrillers, and again, you don't know if this is a supernatural film or just a kooks. And we thought it was just going to be kooks. And then when she saw the trailer and she could tell that it was supernatural. And that's when I could tell.
Yeah.
It.
Okay.
So yeah, you're right. So supernatural films, she nixes usually, but thrillers that are horror films, she's okay with.
You know, you can always go like take a shit while she watches the trailer.
Right. You can walk out.
I guess.
Everybody poops.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Of course, Eric would have to bring that up.
In fact.
Yeah, I know. Let's see, what else do we want to discuss? The plan goes horribly wrong. We have amateurs and also people that are being taken advantage of by a kook. And we have amateurs dealing with supernatural events and demons and whatever that, unfortunately, they're not prepared to, fight or defend themselves against.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in other words, they suck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bad plan. I mean, you know what? I'm thinking the guy just assumed it was not going to work, and that's why he went along with it. But once it started and they found out it was actually real, I think they were like, well, I guess we just gotta
go. That brings up the whole murder of crows thing. I think I noticed when a murder of crows shows up in my backyard.
Yes.
You think this is because of what we did? Yes.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yes.
I like that at the end. Yep. There's a moment where Henry finally tries to do the right thing, but then his wife dies because of it. So,
that was good.
Mother's a mother.
Yeah, that's true. So what about the cop? I think this was another thing that came out of left field because I figured that storyline was going to go on until the very end of the film. But
She totally would have busted him.
Yeah,
she was on him. But yeah. Thanks to Mr. Satan, she blew her brains out.
Yeah, and I do like that she was totally on to them right away. I mean, it was fairly realistic.
There's nothing suspicious about the doctor who...
Yeah, you just happen to see her walking in front of your house. Oh, okay. All right.
Right, and they contradict themselves and all this other stuff, and he's making stuff up as he's going on, and it's like, and his wife says, "You're screwing it up. Oh, my gosh." And he goes,
Stick with the plan?
Right. Yeah. So even though they're innocent and have no... look innocent, I should say, and have no record, they are, again, amateurs... very much amateurs in doing this, and so the cop could read it pretty well.
Well, it's who is the last person to see them? How are they behaving suspiciously? Okay, there's nothing wrong here, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's
kind of Detective 101.
Yeah, yeah.
The individuals... detective, kind of like average observant human 101.
Right. The individual that's missing is a patient. This patient walks by their house all the time. The people are acting very suspicious. If they're not guilty, at least they're definitely going to be someone we're going to look into for sure. So it's 101, as you said. Yep, exactly. So I do like the fate of the woman, though, that she did make it out. I was kind of glad about that. I don't know if she's in trouble, though, because Satan's walking across the road.
Well, I don't think it's a good thing.
What, what's that? What's that?
I said she looks down at her belly when she sees Satan walking across the road.
Yeah, that's true.
I think she's just grateful that she got out and that it's not Satan in her belly.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
And we know Jackson's not in there anymore because she saw him in the window as she was driving away.
Yeah, getting picked up by something.
Right.
Nothing good.
Yeah, nothing good at all.
So does that house have a permanent portal?
That's a great question.
Yeah, that is a great question. And who will get to see the ghosts? Will it be everybody or just some of the people? I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that's up to the ghosts.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because the ghosts or demons or whatever they were definitely were dangerous, as we saw, with especially with the contortionist. Ian, yeah.
Oh, that ghost was so freaky.
Yeah, most certainly.
Well, who was freakier, contortionist ghost or floss ghost?
I still say
that's a hard call.
I'm going with the contortionist because he actually came up to you and actually was doing some violent activity while floss just happened to be there. Oh, what about the ghost with
only disgusting?
That, what about the tall ghost?
The costume tall ghost?
Yeah. That one was kind of freaky too. And
it was weird that it was a little kid first and then it was tall.
Right. That's why it was weird. Yeah. And I was still convinced at that point that it was just people scamming her. And then once I found out it was actually a ghost or supernatural, that kind of made me very uncomfortable after the fact.
Yeah, I got to give kudos to anybody who can make a man in a sheet creepy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like your Charlie Brown Christmas, not Charlie Brown Christmas, Charlie Brown Halloween special costume and make it work.
Yeah.
Well, I did like how they introduced the floss lady, like he was sleeping and he thought it was his wife.
Right. That was pretty awesome.
That was
awesome. And then she starts coming to him and teeth are falling out.
Well, you know something's wrong because, like, nobody flosses that long. Nobody does. Like, they hold the shot forever. And he's just, you're like, okay, she's flossing in the background. Something creepy is going to happen here. Didn't know exactly what. You just knew that there's something terrible is going to happen with the floss.
Yeah. Yeah, it was gross. I have to say that's the thing that was kind of cool about this film. It's obviously a very low budget film, and the special effects were generally practical, creepy, and eccentric moments, and hiring people such as the contortionists to do what they do. And all that worked in a horror film, and they didn't really have to have expensive makeup or special effects to do any of it. And the ghost and the sheet, you know, like Mike said, that made it creepy, and yet it's just a ghost in a sheet. So yeah, it was pretty fantastic, Eric.
One aspect of this I did enjoy, and this is more like a detail than an actual plot point, but was the fact that this couple was actually kind of tech savvy. Because, you know, most of the time older people are depicted as, what's an iPhone? But they had the whole, you know, system wired up with the cameras, so they had that monitor right by the front door so they could see what she's up to up in the bedroom. And they had that whole thing set up for getting the passcode to her phone and the elaborate scam with the social media to try and throw off the police. I thought that was all pretty cool that they were using technology.
Yeah, that was cool. Yep.
Now, I don't know how old are... Did anyone look up how old the actors are?
I did not know.
Because the husband, Henry, I've known... I mean, he's been around for about 10 years because he played Death on Supernatural.
That's where I knew that face from. Okay.
And it was that
born,
was...
The actor was like, born in 55.
And wasn't he that like season 5 or 4 of Supernatural, which just ended after season 15 after a year long COVID delay? So it's been like 16 years since, you know, or like 10 or 11 years since he first appeared there, and he didn't look young then. So I just don't know if he's like a little bit of an older looking 60s or if he's in his 70s.
They're both around 60.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. So I don't, I changed my opinion. They are not elderly folk. Because we're not too far from this.
No, hang on. They're more like 65. Sorry, I did math wrong in my head.
Gotcha.
But yeah, they're like retirement age if you retire when you're 65.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is happening less and less often.
Yeah, that's true too. Unless people make money quicker. But sure. The dollar doesn't go as far
Social
as
it Security does. Ain't what it used to be.
That's true. Exactly.
Well, because people aren't what they used to be.
True.
Because they're not dying like they're supposed
at 70.
To.
70. Yeah.
Right. Well, and also
the money stays.
Also the inflation too, as well.
Anyway.
Well, but it used to be that.
Anyway.
You got paid at 65 because that was the average life expectancy. Half of us were supposed to be dead before you ever collected.
Anyway, right. Eric has a good point. That's off topic.
Remember when we were talking about the movie?
I remember when we were talking about hats and hair.
Let's see. Any other items that we wanted to bring up directly related to this film here? Anyone? Scenes that we missed? All right. I guess.
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I would ask is this, and I said this at the beginning of the podcast, or maybe the early middle, which is, I'm not sure if this is a good thing or a missed opportunity. Which is that the name of the film is Anything for Jackson, and yet Jackson and the whole possessed baby thing are much more of a side story to what's going on, right? I guess it's like Treasure of the Sierra Madre is where they're really just going after the treasure. It's the treasure itself is not necessarily a feature in the film.
Well, and I think it's intentional because they don't want the title to give away what the movie's about.
Right. So I guess that's, I mean, so on the one hand, it is, and it's there in the plot synopsis, right? So if you read the plot synopsis, It says that an elderly couple tries to do a reversed exorcism to bring back their grandson, right? Or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going in, if you looked at all, you didn't even have to watch the trailer. You know, that's the premise of the film. And that's just kind of hangs out there. Did they really go to that premise as much as they could have and do what they could with that? Because or was it really just the MacGuffin to the story to get all the rest of the wacky shenanigans and have Satanist grandma and grandpa?
I spent not a second thinking about it, and I'm probably not going to now.
Okay, I'm just wondering. Like, I was just thinking about the film earlier, and like, you know, was it something? Was there anything they missed, or any opportunities they missed, or anything? And I wasn't really sure if it was a missed opportunity that they could have done something with that, or is it just smart that they didn't go there and that they said we're going to go here and then led the audience down a completely different path? And I'm not saying good or bad. I'm just curious. I like the film plenty as it is.
Well, no, and that's a fair point, Mike, to ask that because you're right. But yeah. I mean, the route they did go. Obviously, it was quite solid. So I think that was a good way to go, but your way could have worked.
I guess it's sort of like when we talked about, and we never reviewed it on the podcast, but when we reviewed Wreck Apocalypse, which was an okay zombie film, except for the fact there was no actual apocalypse.
Right. They should have renamed it something different. It should not have been called Wreck Apocalypse. Wreck
Boat or something?
Or a wreck, sea murder, or a wreck, Maelstrom or something. Yeah, you know, that's what it should have been called. You're absolutely right. But yeah, generally, it was a decent film. It's just that it was mismarketed. Yeah. Well, that's the thing about this movie here. Anything But Jackson. I mean, it is a weird title, and I think it may have shied away a lot of viewers. You know,
you'll be right about that.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you read the synopsis too, it sounds silly too. So it's like, well, the synopsis sounds silly. An elderly couple, Satanists, and the title. What does it even mean? Is this some dumb comedy or whatever?
Yeah,
but again,
it didn't pull me in, that's for sure. The title itself, and
yeah,
saying that it was a horrible
title for the movie, though. Our Little Satan,
right. Yeah, I know, I agree with you. There's not much they could have named this, but it just didn't pull me in, so I might not have seen it if it hadn't been for this podcast.
Right,
because there's so much other stuff that I'm watching, you know mm-hmm. what I mean, that caught my
yeah.
attention.
Well, and that's the thing, I usually skip over a lot of stuff, because I don't watch trailers and I don't really watch Wiki, so I do check reviews and stuff. But this one here, you know, I hadn't heard anything about this film, and I saw it pop up on Shudder. Title looked kind of stupid, and so I kind of just ignored it. And then I started seeing, like you, Eric, you know, people were mentioning it on Facebook and social media or wherever, and it's like, all right, I'm gonna have to check it out. I mean, They're saying it's actually really good, and so I suggested with my wife. She didn't like it, the trailer, but I still said, you know, I'm going to still watch it myself later, and I did, and I'm glad I did. But again, it's just like you, Barrett. If I hadn't been notified by social media that week, or I hadn't been on social media that week, which is generally a good thing because social media sucks, I would have not known that it existed. And I would have missed a pretty good film just because of the title,
mm-hmm.
you know? So yeah, that just tells you,
no, I understand the point that's being made. I off the top of my head, can't think of a better title for the movie.
I can't either.
I like the fact that it wasn't just possession.
Right.
Darkness.
Yeah.
Evil, you know, something. I like the fact that it's this weird
quirky
title, and I always like that. I think horror titles work well like that, when it's like, what the hell is this about, and it makes you want to know. Right. And I understand, like, when they try to do the Alone, which we had how many Alone? Two Alone? Three Alone
at
films
least.
This year?
This year.
They're trying. It's lonely and it's spooky.
Edgy.
And it's edgy, yeah. And ominous and vague as fuck. And it doesn't pull me in. It's like, I don't care. I don't.
There's got to be a middle ground. You can't have the generic cool title, because, like you said, it just gets lost in the mix. And you can't have the weird title, because people will just go out of sound stupid. So you got to have something in the middle, I think.
Right. I mean, it's I mean, like, you can get away with some things, like Jaws. Okay, tells you something. Jaws, right. Tells you something, right? It tells you that something with Jaws is eating things. You don't know what. It didn't have to be a shark. It could have been a bear.
Well, and it was also a pretty famous book anyway, right? So,
right.
So that helped.
And yeah. That helped. But then you just get back to the, well, what about the title of the book? It still tells you a thing, right?
Right.
It conjures the image it wants, which is something is eating people.
Yeah.
And it works there. It works for Jaws. The Exorcist. Yeah. Well, it tells you a thing at a time when The Exorcist wasn't a cliche. Or The Omen, you know, kind of helps. But
yeah,
now
yeah.
It's just like, when it's dark.
Yeah.
The right. Giant.
Alone. Yeah. Yeah. The
Alone.
Giant.
You know, it's,
yeah.
Like, was there a giant in The Giant? We're not sure.
Right. Well, like Eric, me and you saw a film the other day, Girl, right? I mean, that's as generic as you can get.
Right.
Yeah, you know, and it was actually a thriller / melodrama type of thing.
I was not thrilled.
Right, but yeah. I think of, what was that? A Monster Calls. All right, you know what? That evoked something to me. You know, it sounds like monsters coming to visit. Yeah, what is that about?
That's a perfect middle title. That's a perfect.
That's a weird, that's an odd little title. It gives me something, and it's not misleading. Is there a monster in the film? Yes. Right. By any chance, does Liam Neeson play the monster? Well, yes, he does. Okay, I'm in. You know, it's fine. All right. You know, or, A Quiet Place, you know, is an interesting sort of evocative. It's creepy.
Yeah,
that's
a good time.
But, yeah. I think that worked. It wasn't just quiet. You know,
right.
That might have been just too vague.
Right.
Anyway, I think this is the part of the podcast where we realize we're just talking about shit to talk about shit, and we realize we don't have anything to say.
Yeah,
to say
so I was trying to move us on 15 minutes ago.
So let's talk about things that we've been watching and news. So either or, and whatnot. So I'll start. I did see a couple of films of note. One was called Break. It's a Russian film. About people on a gondola that obviously the title itself, which is another a lame title, you could say, Break, kind of tells you what it's going to be about. So it's a really good thriller. High recommend. You can pretty much get it anywhere. But
is
if
it
you're
significantly different than Frozen?
Yeah, because it's a bigger cast. It has a, you know, it's in a gondola, so it's not out in the freezer.
Oh, so there's more people. That's the difference.
Yeah. It's
I'll just watch Frozen again.
Well, and it also has to do with a break rather than people just stuck, right?
Okay, so, fair enough.
Yeah, so it's not a ripoff by any means. So if you're willing to watch it for free with commercials,
fuck commercials.
It's on Tubi.
Say it. There
Tubi. But you can pretty much rent it wherever. But I think you can rent it wherever. I don't think it's a Tubi exclusive because Tubi now does have their exclusives. But it is worth checking out. Also, I think I saw possibly the best horror film of the year on Shudder as well this month, called A Good Woman Is Hard to Find.
I disagree.
Have you seen the film, Eric?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Did you like it?
It was okay. It's not all you're building it up to be.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
Is it ever?
What did you say, Mike? What did Mike say?
I said, is it ever?
Oh, I don't know. I think Barrett may agree that it's a top 10.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I thought it was pretty good. It's definitely not number one. Phil is saying number one. I say it hits my top 10, but, I have to look over my top 10 to make sure of that, and I just say that off the cuff.
It's good.
It's good.
It's not the best movie of the year.
It's a little bit of a slow burn, like really slow burn.
Right. And it's a really good thriller, even more so than a horror film.
I wouldn't even classify it as a horror film.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. It's a revenge flick.
It's awesome.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, the film's awesome. It's going to be on my during our end of year review. It'll be a film that I'll be mentioning for sure.
Is this a movie where a woman is raped and has to get revenge?
No.
Okay. Actually.
That I had to know, because the last time we had a revenge film, coincidentally called Revenge, and everyone praised it to high heaven, and it was, to me, it was a fine film, but it was not the best film ever. I don't know that Phil was one pushing it that hard, but a lot of people were.
No,
and it was just a revenge film.
I actually didn't like it. The first time I watched it, I didn't like it. But Revenge, the second time I watched it, I liked it because then I could appreciate it as a grindhouse film rather than a real thriller. because I was looking at it as a thriller, and I go, there's no way this could happen. This is what the. But then when I reevaluated it as just a midnight movie, it's pretty damn awesome. But yeah, I was not one of the people that was pushing it, Mike, so I am not guilty of that. So I saw that film, and that was a damn good film, which again is called A Good Woman Is Hard to Find. It's found on Shudder, and it stars the same actress that played the babysitter in the movie Emily, which we did an episode on. She plays a good role. This a protagonist rather than the antagonist, like she was in Emily. And yeah, she's really good in the film. Also been playing Cyberpunk 2077, still it's pretty good. I'm not having any of the problems that other people, or not other people, but at least what the news media or the bloggers are saying, are having on Xbox One, but basically on the legacy systems, Xbox One and PlayStation 4, is it 4?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. There's people saying that it's having a lot of issues running on those platforms.
The hardware is just not powerful enough.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I unfortunately haven't had those problems. Fortunately,
what are you playing it on?
Xbox One.
So you're playing it on a legacy system.
Yes, yeah. But I'm not having the problems that some people, I guess, are having.
Well, given that they're like refunding people,
it's got to be bad.
It's got to be something, right? It's got to be more than just like one or two people.
Yeah, it's right. Microsoft and Sony that are refunding, so it's not just even one of them. You know, it's all.
Well, Phil, Phil, let me ask you a question. Did you adjust your settings to be like low res?
No, not really.
Okay.
Would you like to?
Well, for whatever reason, I'm just not having the crash problems or anything.
You got lucky. Cool.
Yeah, I'm just lucky, I guess. But all in all, the game is a pretty solid game. There's a hell of a lot of side missions and various side jobs and whatnot that happen. So you can follow the path of the main story, and that I guess you can finish in 40 hours, I guess they're saying, or 30 hours. But if you can go off and do a lot of the side stuff, the game can last for like as long as that Skyrim game, I guess.
I'm just glad you're playing something other than Far Cry.
Yeah. Well, I actually did play Far Cry the other day for my daughters, because they always want to watch me play video games. And since Cyberpunk 2077...
No, girls, these games are way too violent for you to play. But you can watch me blow people's brains out.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that 2077 can not only be violent, but it also can show a good portion of nudity. So to be safe.
Hey, girls, you want to watch Daddy pick out the size of the penis of his avatar?
So to be safe, I actually played a little of Far Cry 5 instead, and most of it is just when I play it for the kids, I'm not actually doing anything except going through the forests and going in buildings and stuff, because you can Far Cry 5 is so huge you can actually do stuff without ever fighting. And so that's what I do with the kids. While Cyberpunk 2077, you could mistakenly get nudity thrown onto the screen. So be careful. And so that's pretty much all I've been. Oh, I've been watching Big Sky too. Big Sky, David Kelly's show. Episode 5 had another big cliffhanger. Episode 1 and now episode 5 has had a big cliffhanger. It's a pretty decent thriller. About serial killers and human trafficking and whatever. It's on ABC, I think, but you can watch it on Hulu as well the next day. I know, Barrett, you were watching it originally. Are you still watching it?
Oh, yeah. I just wish we had gotten more than 5 episodes before the winter break.
Oh, so that's it.
That's it until January.
Oh.
Like late January or something that.
So there is no episode 6 yet?
Not yet.
Oh, well, okay, I'll have to tell my wife that, just because we
were
expecting
to watch. Nice big cliffhanger.
Yeah, it was a huge cliffhanger. So
that's why you should never watch a season of television until it's over.
Yeah, I guess so. But again, I this is the first regular station show I've watched in years. So, and I forgot that they do those breaks. So yeah, me and my wife are planning to watch it tomorrow night. I guess we're not going to be watching it after all, because there is no
Merry Christmas. Six.
Yeah, right. Damn you, ABC. So yeah, that's about it for me. So I was going with you, Eric.
Oh, what have I been watching? I watched a movie called The Retreat, which I found on the iTunes store. It had a kind of cool looking cover and a good description, so I watched it and regretted it. it's not a great movie. Oddly enough, the thing about this movie that really made me dislike it was the audio, the sound work on the movie, the ADR and the Foley. For some reason, like, most of the scenes in this movie happen outdoors, like in the Adirondacks. And like all the overdubbed dialogue and like the snow crunching noises had absolutely no reverb on them at all. They sound like they're in a soundproof studio, and it was bugging the crap out of me. So I didn't like The Retreat all that much. I then give Krampus a rewatch, and that movie still rules. I also watched A Good Woman Is Hard to Find. I didn't like it as much as Phil, but I thought it was decent. I gave my annual watch of Silent Night, Deadly Night. You better run, boy! You better run for your life!
That's the best.
This is the moment where Eric channels his inner Phil, where he mentions his movie and then just randomly needle drops a quote.
Love
when
it.
You see Santa Claus, you better run, boy. You better run for your life. That's awesome.
And then on, I guess it was just last night, I did for the Basement Movie Cast, we did a commentary for Chud.
That's a great film.
No, it's not.
I love Chud, man.
Yeah, it's a pretty solid film.
Well, here's the thing. I got this conversation with Scott, too. There's a difference between enjoying a film and it being a great movie.
I agree with that.
You can enjoy watching, like, Chud, but it's not a great movie. That doesn't make it a great movie.
It's a pretty damn good horror film.
We had fun talking over it. But really, I had seen it before and remembered very little about it, and I figured out that the reason I remembered very little about it is because very little actually fucking happens in the movie. It's really backloaded towards the end of the movie with all the action.
Speaking of Chud, my short story, The Deuce, is in the Chud Lives, a tribute anthology.
Is that about a poop?
Nope. It's a horror anthology that includes people like Jonathan Mayberry, but it also has my story in it as well. And it is put together by Eric S. Brown and also the producer of the film Chud. So
it could be about, because you know, when people poop, sometimes they say they're dropping a deuce.
Dropping a deuce.
No. The Deuce, actually, I wrote the story even before the HBO television series came out. The Deuce is the name of 42nd Street, Times Square, back in the red light district time.
Okay.
Yeah, and since Chud takes place in that era, my story takes place in the Deuce, meaning in Times Square. And so that's why I called it the Deuce. So not poops now.
But it could be.
The only other thing I've started watching is on they got me to sign back up for HBO Max. So I've been watching The Flight Attendant on HBO Max, which isn't necessarily horror, but it is like murder mystery kind of stuff. So
it's fun.
I've been watching it's enjoyable.
It's decent. Yeah. They actually are making a second season of it now.
Yeah. I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just finished episode 4.
Gotcha. Yeah. I did the first 3. I have to get onto the, I think how many, there's 8 episodes, is there?
I think so.
I thought there was 10, but I could be wrong.
10, I think it's 8.
Yeah. They did it weird too. They released 3 all at once, and then they released 2. And then I don't know how they did the last 3 episodes, but
there's one a week
after that. Never watch a season of television until it's over.
Yeah. But yeah, now they're all out, so you can just go on and watch it. And the lead actress was on The Big Bang Theory. She's really good in the film.
Everybody makes fun of me, but there's reasons behind my madness.
Yeah, you're right.
It doesn't mean it's not madness.
But I'm having fun. And at least I know where all my movies are because I shelved them alphabetically by title.
You know who else had fun? Jeffrey Dahmer.
You're right. Did. Preferring to watch a season at once and eating people are the same thing, Mike. You're completely right.
No, one gives you nourishment.
Yeah.
You better run, well, boy. You better run for your life.
Yeah, you better run, Mike, you motherfucker.
Anything else, sir?
No, fuck Mike. That's the moral of the story.
Fair enough. Speaking of Mike.
Fuck him.
Let's see. I finally got around to watching the last two episodes of Raised by Wolves. I don't remember what distracted me there. There is going to be apparently a season two, or they were talking about a season two, which after I think it's, is it a 10 episode series? Anyway, before I watched the last two, I didn't know how they were going to do another season. I guess I do know how they're going to do another season. I'm not entirely sure I'm going to look forward to it because I feel like they could have wrapped the story up. It definitely feels like Ridley Scott saying, this is all the stuff I want to do in Alien, but they wouldn't let me make an Alien movie without an alien, so I'm going to make this instead. And, you know, so it's just, don't get me wrong, there's stuff, there's really good stuff in it. And also some contenders for Kill of the Year in that one. And if you do like serious sci-fi, allegorical science fiction, then I would certainly recommend giving it a shot. It's basically the much better version of Prometheus and Covenant, and more interesting version of those films.
Is it awesome?
I would not say awesome. I would say it's pretty solid, but I'm really curious where they're going to go with it. And they definitely wrote it in a way that they need a follow-up season, right? They did not give the story an ending. So I do hope they did get renewed. I think they did, but I'm not 100% positive. My wife and I finished watching the first season of Evil from CBS, which is available on Netflix. And I have no idea if the first season is 13 episodes because that's what they were contracted for, or if the first season is 13 episodes because a plague killed everybody and they had to shut production down.
It was supposed to be 13 episodes. It was on, I think, ABC originally. That's when CBS. We watched it. Oh, CBS. Yeah. And it was a, you know, the half season show order.
Okay.
It started in like a January.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's. I still don't know entirely what to make of it. There's things I like. I really like Michael Emerson, but I always like Michael Emerson. You know, I think the actors are decent. There are some fun bits in it, and there's also some really TV procedural stuff. Yay! So it really depends on your tolerance for it, and I just don't know if they're going to go in interesting places with this, or if they're going to stay stuck in neutral. So, I'm weirdly indecisive about it, but it's a thing. And I do like a lot of the actors involved in it. Let's see if there's anything else. I did rent, but I haven't, I didn't rent. I bought, which I mentioned earlier, Possessor. I also bought Love and Monsters was on sale, so I purchased that. I'm hoping to watch those in the next couple of days.
Ellen Holman stars in that. That's supposed to be pretty good film.
Okay. And I don't know. Eric, can you hear this? Do you hear that, Eric? That's me taking off the wrapper to my Arrow collection of Tremors.
Yeah, fuck you.
I'm
back to my main point, which is fuck Mike. He's a dick.
Yeah, that was just me.
Uh, I am a dick with a copy of Tremors in 4K. Have you
seen watch Love and Monsters yet?
No, not yet. That's what I said. I'm planning on watching in the next couple of days. But I'm just saying, so that's on my to-do list.
Yep.
As well as at some
Mike,
point
where
digging.
Where did you order Tremors from? Was it from Amazon?
I did order from Amazon, but I ordered it first day or very soon after.
Okay.
So
when did it go on pre-order?
September.
All right. I'm not as upset anymore because I was a couple months behind you.
I'm thinking it was I don't remember September, October. It might have maybe August. I don't know. What was the other box set? It was Flash Gordon that came out September-ish. So it was after that.
They had a Pitch Black movie.
Yeah, Pitch Black, which is not nearly as nice a set. But there is a Pitch Black set.
Did you get the Super Deluxe Tremors with all the goodies in it?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, it is. I have it. I've got the little poster here.
Is the Pitch Black one as good as the Flash Gordon one, at least?
Oh, God, no. The Flash Gordon one is, packed.
Really?
So the Pitch Black is not got a lot. So yeah. I've got my poster for the City of Perfection and with graboid and that anatomical diagrams, in case you want to know where exactly the butt end is. sorry, the ass end. Very, very thick book with reading that is in
graboid's poop too.
Yeah, in size. The original press kit, got a copy of the original press kit in size three font, so that'll be fun. God, getting old sucks. Oh, I got a coupon here for Walter's Market. 50% off.
Oh, Walter's Market, okay. Took me a second to put that together.
Yeah, he's the guy that christened the graboids.
Anything else, Mike?
No, that's about it. And lobby cards, it looks like. So yeah, it's cool. It's a nice set. It really is. That I definitely recommend. And an ad for arrowplayer.com. Try free for 30 days because you know what we all need in life? One more subscription service.
What's the new subscription service?
www.arrow-player.com.
Oh, yeah, that's been there for a while. And even Shout Screen Factory has their own, and Full Moon has their own, and Criterion has their own, and Sundance has their own.
And operators are standing by for anyone who would like to contact Dark Discussions.
Yeah. Oh, and I think Barrett, you have the BBC
as not
one, right?
Tubi.
I have what?
The BBC one, right?
Yeah.
BBC. Yeah. So there are dozens of them. No, Tubi's actually pretty good. We have Tubi on every day. My kids always have Tubi on because they have a lot of good stuff there for the kids.
You're right.
But here's the thing, Eric. Here's the thing. The truth is, they know what they say. There's no such thing as bad advertising. There are going to be people possibly listening to this podcast who have never heard of Tubi before, and you just saying fuck Tubi, fuck Tubi, fuck Tubi, fuck Tubi over and over and over again is just going to encourage some of them to try and find out what exactly Tubi is. And you might just
be
driving traffic.
The only reason I ever say that is because other people mention it. So you're mentioning it anyway, so it's not my fault. So fuck off. Stop trying to blame it on me.
Well, no, you're creating jobs. You're making a company more successful. That's good.
And you've turned it into a meme.
Yeah, I guess
you've turned it into a
meme. Right, well, let's move on.
I hate all of you.
We're at
Go
2 hours.
Go die.
All right, we're at 2 hours. So, Barrett, what about yourself? Anything?
Let's see. We finished off The Mandalorian last Friday, which I really enjoyed the finale for. We've started watching
Mandalorian's an Ewok. Spoiler warning.
We've started watching The Expanse has returned for a fifth season, and I really like that show. I've read a few of the books.
Netflix,
so,
right? That's on Netflix?
Prime.
Amazon Prime, yeah.
Yep. It was sci-fi, and then Prime bought it.
Yeah, Mandalorian's Disney Plus for folks who are curious.
Disney Plus, yep. And I just got a copy of the UHD version of Akira, which I have been meaning to buy for years. It's Japanese anime, one of my favorite Japanese anime movies.
Did you get the $40 version of it?
I did, yeah, yeah. It comes with a little booklet with a bunch of stuff in it. I haven't really looked at it too closely yet, but I'm hoping this weekend I get a chance to watch it. So,
did it come with a 50% coupon to a fictional store?
It did not. Oh, so well, it was not that cool. But I'm happy with the movie. You know, I like the movie, so.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Cyberpunk and all that good stuff. But anyway, very good. Anything else, Barrett? Was that it?
That's pretty much it.
All right, sounds good. Because we're already at 2 hours and we recorded a little later, we're going to skip the formality stuff. So I guess we can give our final thoughts on tonight's episode. So, Eric, why don't you start?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Anything for Jackson. It's going to be in my top 10 for horror movies this year. It's on Shudder. I highly recommend it.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, for me... yeah, I would concur. This is a top film. With this one, and A Good Woman is hard to find. Shudder's had a damn good December for me. Two films that are certainly on my list at the end of the year. Yeah, thumbs up. Barrett.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. I highly suggest seeing it. It's definitely in my top 10 as well.
Mike.
Yeah, definitely a high recommend off Shudder. I obviously recommend Shudder. I've been whoring Shudder for years. It'd be nice if they finally paid the bill. It is a really good new selection. They've had a good few good things this year, and people should definitely give it a try.
All right, sounds good. So once again, this is Anything for Jackson, a 2020 film. Available on Shudder, as we just mentioned, directed by Justin Dyke and written by Keith Cooper, starring a handful of folks, specifically Sheila McCarthy, Julian Richings, Constantina Mantelos, and Josh Crudis, who as Ian. And he actually was a standout as well. We just mentioned him in passing. We didn't even mention the actor that played Ian. With all that stated, I guess, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in. Let's just talk about Anything for Jackson. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.
I have a bonnet trimmed with blue. Do you wear it? Yes, I do. I will wear it when I can. Going to the ball with my young man. My young man has got to see when he comes back, he'll pay for me. Tip to the heel and tip to the toe, and that's the way the party goes. I have a bonnet trimmed with blue. Do you wear it? Yes, I do. I will wear it when I can. Going to the ball with my young man.